This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Hour number two, let's get it. And we're coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans Studios. These are challenging times, and Rocket Mortgage is prepared to help. If you need mortgage assistance, contact their team 24/7. At rocketmortgage.com, from their home to yours, the team at Rocket Mortgage is with you. Coming up in 15 minutes, Dr. Brian McDonough, he hosts the Daily Coronavirus Podcast. He's going to stop by, and at the top of the hour, new Browns tight end Austin Hooper is going to join the show, formerly of the Atlanta Falcons. Stuart Kovacs is back in our New York City studio. Stu, let me ask you a quick question. What have you been doing the most during this coronavirus pandemic, and what have you been doing the least? For me, I'll give you my two answers first. Most, I've been watching more TV than ever. I've seen so many bar rescues, Law and Orders now, just over and over with the bunch of TV shows that I keep on watching. Also, the Charlie Sheen and the Two and a Half Men show, I keep on going back to that as they've been airing that a bunch. And then the least, I have not shaved in the last 15, 16 days. Now, I usually shave a lot, and I don't like to have much facial hair on my face. And, usually don't go with facial hair. And now, ever since the coronavirus pandemic, I have not been shaving at all. So I'm not at Ben Roethlisberger status yet, where you look like, Tom Hanks in Castaway, where I'm walking around my house and I'm screaming, "Wilson! Wilson!" No, I'm not doing that. But what about for you, Stuart Kovacs? What have you done the most? What have you done the least during the coronavirus pandemic?
For me, the most has to be playing video games, only because the fact that we don't have sports now. So I kind of use the video games as my sports, playing the FIFAs, the Maddens, the NBA 2Ks of the world. So that's what I've been doing most. I would say the least. I really haven't left the house until today for like 2 weeks. So just leaving my house, I would say, is something I've done the least.
Yeah, that's a good one. Not many of us, obviously, if you're practicing the proper social distancing and you're trying to do the right thing in the world right now, you're only really leaving your house to go to the supermarket or maybe go on a walk and get some exercise. So, that's a good point by you and the obvious, really, answer to this question. But when we get back to what we're doing the most, when you play those video games, are you playing against other people or is it just yourself?
Yeah, sometimes against other people, and sometimes it's myself. It's probably like a 50-50 split, I would say.
Are you betting on those games? Since we all need that gambling fix, do you maybe play, I don't know, your buddy Anthony Gallo, who works down the hall for WFAN, you guys play a little 2K. Are you betting when it's Lakers and Nuggets on the Stuart Kovacs Xbox?
I have not done that. I did play him in Madden the other day, and I beat him 50-5. He was not too happy about that. I should have put money on that.
Wait, he got a field goal and a safety?
He got a blocked extra point returned for a touchdown, for the 2 points and a safety. Yeah, and a field goal, I mean.
Man, so Gallo's not a good video game player is what you're telling me.
He is not, no.
Gotcha. Have you watched this show Tiger King?
I have. I watched the whole thing a few days ago, yes.
All right, so last week it was being described to me because I've heard about the show, but I never had any interest. And when it was being described to me, I said, I'm never going to watch this show. No way. It was being described to me as there's this character, Carol, who she may have, or they accuse her of feeding her husband to a tiger and all this fighting with tigers that are coming from rescues or, they're going to animal rescues or people that are breeding them. I go, this show seems too stupid for me. I'm not going to watch it. And trust me, I enjoy a lot of stupid television. I watch Jersey Shore. I watch the show Dave that's produced by Little Dicky. So I'm okay with watching stupid television. But the way that it was described to me, I thought, no way, no way, no way. So last night on the show, Tiger King comes back up in conversation. And Mikey B gave a pretty damn good endorsement. So last night, I watched the first episode. And then I rewatched the first episode this morning because it was kind of late when I decided to get to it. So I was going in and out and falling asleep on my couch. So I rewatched the first episode this morning and I got hooked. And now I'm two episodes in. I'm trying to gradually watch the episodes and I'm trying not to double up, you know, two episodes in one day because I want to have a little legs to this entire situation and not just bang out the episodes in 2 days, two, 3 days, and then I'm bored for the other, days of the week because there's really nothing to do. So I may try from here on out to watch one a day, but this show is so stupid, it's so wacky, and no matter what side of the fence you're on, no matter, and I haven't seen the entire thing, and I haven't done much homework on it, and all my friends keep on saying, wait till this more information comes out and you see more of the show, your opinions could change a little bit. But whether it is Joe Exotic or Doc Antle or Carol Baskin, all three of them, they're cult leaders. That's what they are. You know, you hear about the interns and the internship program with the special colored shirt that you get that Carol describes. Everyone is genuflecting to her. It's too much of a cult feel. It really is. And then they call that Doc Antle Bhagavan or whatever it is, and it means Lord, and he had people that were willingly, going there, and then they end up marrying him or dating him. You know, this whole thing, there was a part, this is how wacky this show is. They had a girl talk about how she got implants when she was at, this tiger farm or this zoo, and she goes, yeah, I wanted the implant so I could get some rest because of the long days that I worked in. And that was overlooked in this entire thing. I'm sitting there at my television saying, that's absolutely crazy. It's nuts. It's wild. And that's overlooked because there's so much stupidity and there's so many dumb things that are happening during the show that something like that, where it's very uncomfortable when you're watching it, gets overlooked. Because then Joe Exotic opens his mouth and he's running a cult too. When you watch the entire episode. So it's stupid, but it's entertaining, and you're not watching it necessarily. You know, you may watch it because you're enjoying it, but I'm watching it saying, I can't believe how stupid people are and how many people buy in to all these practices. You know, I would have zero interest. I'm an animal person. I have a dog. Love my dog. My sister has a dog. Love her dog, too. I have zero interest in owning a lion or a tiger. Zero interest. I have no interest in going to see a baby lion and petting the lion. Have zero interest. And all these people, they all say, oh, my side's right. No, your side's wrong. You have Doc and Joe Exotic basically on the same team. And then Carol, oh, no, they're awful. They're all in this for the money. And yes, some are breeding and, you know, they probably end up killing the animals, which is awful when they get too big. And then for Carol, she's rescuing them, but she's letting people in. She's letting people in to see all the lions. So she's making money off of that too. And the other part, here's the wackiest part of the show, Stu. Did you believe, let me ask you this, Stu Kovacs. Did you believe Carol when they were accusing her, when I guess it was Joe and Doc Antle, when they're accusing her of feeding her husband to a lion or a tiger, did you believe her explanation when she kind of just rolled her eyes and brushed past how of an inane idea that even is?
I did not believe her. I think she did something very, very bad. I think she's guilty. Just by looking at her eyes and her the way she was responding to the questions, to me, I didn't believe her, no.
Bingo. I didn't believe her for 1 second. She rolls her eyes. Oh, yes, there's nothing to see here. I would never do that. That idea is preposterous. Oh, you can't say that. Oh, it's absurd. Yeah, right. No one believes you, lady. So this guy Joe Exotic is crazy. Doc Antle is a cult leader. He's crazy, too. And Carol Baskin, you know what? It would not shock me if what they were accusing her ended up being true. Now, this is going to be a show where I'm going to watch the seven episodes. Right, it's seven episodes, right, in this documentary?
Yeah, it's seven, yep.
Yeah, so I'm going to watch the seven episodes, and I'm going to do a lot more research after, because I don't want anything to be given away. You have so much that's already given away on social media and things that have happened and that have obviously been published about this, so I'm not going to do any of that. The last show I watched where I actually found out the ending before seeing the show, it was, and this is another dumb show that I was watching, Love Island Australia, where the couple that won, Grant and Taylor, well, Grant had a relationship going into the show, so the relationship on the show was not all that authentic. And I was about 24, 23 episodes in, 30 episodes in the season, and I did some perusing on the internet because I didn't realize the show was that far past. And they had, oh, where's Love Island Australia cast number one? Where are they now? And I started perusing that, and it ruined the entire show for me, where I was very annoyed that Grant was having another relationship before he entered Love Island Australia, because everyone's supposed to be single, but he was already in a relationship. And afterwards, they win. Oh, it's a lovely, great scene. And then, boom, all right, we're kicking Taylor to the curb. She's done. And it was very depressing, very upsetting. But in this show, too, Doc and Joe, it's amazing. Joe has 3-4 husbands, and Doc has 3-5 wives. You know, who would be okay with that? In the same environment, the same element. It's such a cult. You know, I once thought Penn State football, spending a weekend up at Happy Valley was a cult, and I walked away saying, and you can tell people at Penn State anything, and all they'll do is to defend the football team and Penn State, and yeah, we are. You know, this is a real-life cult, where as Penn State, it's just okay, you got people in that college element a little bit. And I'm sure Stu, Ryan Tracicki isn't liking that description of this right now, I'd have to imagine.
No chance he would like that at all. He would be very offended by that.
And if he was offended for me calling Penn State a cult, then, you know what, he could always jump and switch teams and go root for his other football team, the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. Because he does root for both Notre Dame and Penn State, but I don't want to bash Trace too much. He did a very nice job last time he worked with us here on CBS Sports Radio. All right, let's go from Tigers to Dolphins. The Dolphins will make an attempt to trade with the Bengals for the number one overall pick, per Armando Saguro. Miami owns the 14 picks in this year's draft, including 6 picks in the top 70. They have 3 first-round picks. They also have double ones and double twos in 2021. If you're the Dolphins and you really love Joe Burrow and you're on the fence about a Herbert and a Tua, you do everything in your power to trade up and go get Joe Burrow. Now, it's going to take 2 to tango. And the Bengals may say, no, we're taking Burrow no matter what. But you have the ammunition this year and next year. And you're going to have to give up 3 first-round picks to go from 5 to 1, you would think, with the amount of picks that Miami has. But if Miami really, really wants Joe Burrow, they could get it done. They could give up 2 out of the 3 ones this year. They could give up a number one next year. You probably have to give up, let's say, a 2 or 3 along the way as well. But you have that ammunition to do so. I've said it from the start. I believe Joe Burrow is going to, and this is no scorching hot take or earth-shattering take, I believe Burrow's going to go number one. I believe he's going to go to the Bengals. I don't think the Bengals are going to trade that spot, because the Bengals are looking at it. Yes, you can get all that capital, but are you going to find that franchise quarterback with that capital? You have what you think is that next can't-miss prospect right in front of you. And it's a quarterback, not only the most important position in the sport, but the most important position in all of sports. I always say that is the quarterback position. So even if they give you a king's ransom, I still believe that the Bengals are going to take Burrow number one overall. But with that being said, if you are the Miami Dolphins and you think Burrow is your next franchise quarterback for the next 10 to 15 years and you're convinced he's the guy, and you look around that division, and maybe you're not a believer in Stidham. Maybe you think only 1 out of the 2 between Allen and Darnold will play well consistently. Then you have an opportunity, and you have to go seize that opportunity. So it doesn't hurt to make that phone call. So the Dolphins can make an attempt. Will the Bengals end up saying yes? Until I see otherwise, I'm going to think that the Bengals say no. We're not going to take that trade offer, and they're going to take Joe Burrow. We'll take a timeout when we come on back. Brian McDonough. He's going to join us. The Dr. Brian McDonough will join us He does a daily coronavirus podcast. He'll give us some update when it comes to COVID-19.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show. You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show.
It is The Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on CBS Sports Radio. And CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line is 855-212-4227. And it's brought to you by the fine folks at Geico. Whether you own or rent, Geico makes it easy to bundle home and auto insurance. Having a home is hard work, so get a quote at geico.com. Easy. Now joining us to talk about the coronavirus pandemic, he joined us a few weeks ago when this was all first coming to the scene and impacting the sports world as well, and that's Dr. Brian McDonough here with us on the show. Doc, how you been?
I'm pretty good. It's been pretty hectic. We're starting to see the uptick as well, and we're working hard to just try to do what we can to help people who are dealing with this. But overall, I'm doing well, healthy. Everything's good so far.
And obviously, we're all being told to practice social distancing, only leave your home when it's a necessity. For example, go to the supermarket, or, sometimes you have to get out of the house to just take a walk around the neighborhood, and you should still be keeping 6 feet from one another. But I know that you're upset because the entire country is not really hearing that message, or they're hearing it and they're not listening. Give me a little insight on that, because, where I am, we're practicing social distancing, but I know that's not the case around the country when you turn on social media and the television.
Yeah, obviously, if you're in New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, Pennsylvania, or Louisiana, California, places where it's hitting, it really comes home and you realize what's going on, because you may know somebody who's in the hospital. You're seeing the devastation of this. But if you're other places, for instance, right now in many areas of the South, North Carolina, South Carolina, we were hearing it before in Florida, there's a tendency to get out and think, well, it's not going to hit us. And that's the thing that's so dangerous about this virus. There's two things I worry about. The first is for those people who aren't yet taking it seriously, that they could be putting themselves and others at risk right now by getting exposed. Because again, a lot of people are passing it and they don't have symptoms. And some people do fine, and others are devastated. The other thing I worry about is people who might be in, let's say, the Northeast Corridor, for instance. They're 2-3 weeks in, and they're thinking, oh, my gosh, I just can't wait till I could break out of this. But I heard Dr. Tony Fauci today, and I point to him all the time. If you're going to listen to anybody, he's the guy. And Fauci is saying, this is when you got to put your foot on the gas. This is when we really got to make a difference, because the numbers are pretty stern. It's 100 to 200,000 people if things go well, and it could be a million if things go badly. And what Fauci is saying is you could even do better than 100,000 if you all stay in, and if other cities don't have, let's say, the ramp up that New York had, we can save even more lives. And every life is somebody's relative, somebody who will never be here again, and that's the way we have to view it.
When we first heard about this, you heard about what was going on in China. You also heard about what was going on in Italy. And for a lot of us, we said, okay, it's going on there, but it's not going on here, and it's not going to get bad here, and we're going to be okay. How did we get to this point where now, obviously, we know that it's not going to be okay, and we're in this scary time where a lot of us have to shut down our lives and really alter what we're doing and how we used to live in a normal state?
Well, the sad truth is, as many advances as we've made in medicine, and my goodness, we've made thousands of advances for everything from antibiotics to the use of plastic even, to the fact that we can fight cancer, we really have never been able to master treatments against viruses. In the world of things that can try to kill us, viruses are very smart. They mutate. They change. They're always evolving. And so what happens is, every time you think you've got a handle on one virus, there's another one that comes. Now, fortunately, most of them we fend off and they're not major symptoms. But something like this is the worst case scenario. And the reason I say it is, let's take a look at Ebola. Ebola was horrible. It killed people very quickly who got it. But because it killed people very quickly who got it, those people died, and they died, which is unfortunate, but they didn't pass it. This is a virus where many people do well. They don't really, they go out, they do what they're doing, but certain people don't. And that's the treachery of it, because it can get into an entire community, an entire world very fast. And that's really what happened. We saw it coming. We talked about it, but it's always hard to warn about something that seems so far away. And, you know, in America, we've always kind of felt we're different and we may not have the same things happen to us. And even in the sports world, you saw it. Like, I remember even the last few days where the NBA was playing, I'm like, why are they playing? And I was like, you know, and I wasn't a genius. I was just, you know, talking medically, saying, stop the games. Like, why are we doing this? But people were thinking, oh, it doesn't seem so bad. But we kind of knew what was going to happen.
Well, it shows you how naive we were, as Dr. Brian McDonough joins us right now, where the debate was not to maybe postpone the season, but it was, okay, just don't have fans in the building. And we kind of forgot about the players that, yes, Doc, they're regular people too, and they could get it. And we saw that really change that Wednesday night, March 11th, when we found out Rudy Gobert had it.
Well, I think that's what happens. And I felt terrible because in his case, you know, everybody was, you know, they jump on him and say, but he was only making fun of something that he thought wasn't that serious. I get it. Like, you know, I look back, I was listening, you know, I did this Coronavirus Today podcast, and the thing about a podcast, the thing about the internet is things never leave. So I went back and I was hearing the first ones and I'm going, like, you're almost predicting it based on science, but you don't necessarily get people on board, and it's normal not to. And we all do it. We like to have denial, but the thing I'm trying to tell people is don't worry about the past. Let's worry about what we can do from today on. And on a positive side, a lot of the social distancing that people are taking it seriously, it's making a difference. And that's why I'm so tough on the people who aren't. And what I'm trying to tell people, and I know a lot of your audience too, you know, a lot of your audience are going to be people who they're outdoors. They're excited. They want to, you know, they want to participate in sports. They live for it. They want to play tennis. They want to play basketball, whatever it is. It's really hard not to, but you got to do it and just keep thinking about your families and others. And, you know, we'll get back to this. You know, we're going to get back to great games. You know, I'm a big Philadelphia sports fan, and I've suffered more than most fans in the world. I just can't wait to suffer watching a losing team again because there's something great about all being together and suffering. You know, this is just so different and so bizarre, and I feel for sports fans because that's such a big outlet.
Dr. Brian McDonough here with us on the Zach Gelb Show. I know everything is now based off, you know, projections, and no one has a firm answer, so I'm not going to hold you to it. But what do you say to people when they go, Doc, when am I going to be able to go back to living some sort of a normal life?
It's tough to tell. Based on what I'm seeing, I'm looking more at June 1st starting to get out of it, not May 1st. I think the president actually is trying to, you know, maintain expectations, and I hope I'm wrong. I pray I'm wrong, but I think to get back to where things start to get normal, the way this virus goes is, remember, it kind of comes in waves. But the thing we got to do right now is, they were talking about it today, it rises real fast, and it can go super high, and it takes a long time to go down that slope. So if we make the slope less high, you know, it doesn't go as high, it doesn't take as long to go down, and that means that in the long run, we get out of it quicker. It'll probably come back, but when it comes back, if it does, we're going to be so much more prepared. And remember, a lot of people will have been exposed, we'll have probably different medicines, we'll know more, it won't be as bad. So what we're trying to do right now is stop what's happening, let's say, in New York, where everybody's overrun. I mean, that's the fear I have, where I'm practicing now. It's like we're just thinking, do we have enough? Do we have enough equipment? Do we have enough protective equipment? Do we have enough ventilators? All those things, that's the worry, because it's almost like a tsunami. You know it's coming, and you just are waiting.
So if we do get back to some state of normalcy in June, let's say maybe even July, like you said, this is probably going to come back in the fall. I heard Dr. Fauci talking about it, and he's pretty much said, like what you did, that we're going to be better equipped for it. Are we going to have another shutdown when it returns in the fall because we're better equipped for it? How do you maybe see this happening in the fall if it goes by the way you're projecting it, kind of back to normalcy in June, but then this thing is going to come back in the fall?
Right. Our best weapon, and it goes such against all of us as human beings, our best weapon is not getting close to each other. Our best weapon is staying away. I mean, I literally in my basement now have a blow up bed where I can sleep so I don't put my family at risk. You know, that's because I'm a physician. I mean, most people don't have to do that. But what I'm saying is it goes against what you want to do normally, you know, and that's the thing that's so tough about it. And it makes it particularly tough with sports. I have a feeling that creative minds in sports will come up with things, but they can't do it yet because you just can't isolate people long enough to know if they might have the virus. That's the problem. You know, you can't, even if you played in an empty stadium, you don't know if the participants might not have the virus. And you don't want to put other people at risk because, you know, obviously it just doesn't make sense. So that's the battle we have right now. You know, I know as a sports fan, I enjoyed the last couple of weeks where they were just talking about free agency in football. I mean, people are grabbing for morsels, you know, something they could talk about. And I think that's the tough thing for sports fans. But it'll come back. I mean, this isn't the end. We're going to fight through this. Like I've told people, this is the United States. We've been through a lot worse, you know, and we're just staying inside. It's not the end of the world, but it is tough, and I don't want to minimize that. My other worry while we're talking about is those who have relatives or people that, you know, may not be able to handle being alone in this thing, make sure you keep in contact with them. We do have social media, at least, which is an opportunity to reach out and try to think about those who, you know, may get a little overwhelmed by the situation.
What do you suggest so people could, you know, get in a better state mentally? Because it is depressing when you're sitting in your house and you're not being able to go out and see your friends, or maybe not being able to work out as often as you like. You know, as a doctor, what would you suggest on the mental side of it? Because there's the physical struggle and there's the mental struggle of this as well.
Well, one of the greatest treatments I've always thought for anxiety and, you know, depression and worry is exercise. So if you happen to be lucky enough to have a treadmill or an exercise bike, you know, do use that. If you're in a community where you're allowed to at least go, you know, a half a mile or whatever and get out and be away from other people, try to walk, get outside. I know people are walking through the neighborhoods and keeping distances, and people are talking to people, neighbors they've never talked before, because they just want to talk to someone. Those things really help. Getting outside and just not sitting in the house. I also would recommend not constantly watching TV and being bombarded from the numbers. I come home from work now and I look at a little, I want to be informed, but then I just try to get totally removed from that. You know, whatever it is that relaxes you, you know, you should do and try to do that. Try not to turn to alcohol and other things, which a lot of people, you know, think of as an escape, but you know, as you know, that leads to bad things down the road. You know, you got to minimize it. I will laugh. I have a 24, 26, and 28-year-old, and my 24 and 26-year-old are with me, and I think I'm becoming very popular on the social media happy hour circuit because I'm answering COVID questions. I kind of pop in and answer questions and then disappear because I know they don't want me around too long, but like there's a lot of curiosity out there, and I think those kind of things, any form of education is good, and people are they're reaching out, you know, silly hat parties. They're doing what they can to try to make the most of it and be inventive.
I may need Dr. Brian McDonough. I may need to hire you for my happy hour coming up on Saturday. He's here with us for a few more minutes.
I will join. I'll be glad to, but I'll be drinking Snapple.
A few more minutes of the Zach Gilb Show with Dr. Brian McDonough. How about the state of medical supplies? We hear that we don't have enough ventilators. We don't have enough masks. Then sometimes you hear people say we do. What is your interpretation of this right now?
It's a tough situation. Like, for instance, I can tell you in my experience, what we're trying to do is conserve. And we're conserving. We've got what we need, but we don't want to overdo it because we don't know what we're really going to need when that surge hits. And that's the fear. Like, is what's going to happen in, let's say, Pennsylvania or South Carolina or Michigan, you know, the same or different? And will it be your hospital or another? And what are the supplies you need? Ultimately, the big fear is obviously not having ventilators, because what we're finding is that when people have those lung issues, we can keep them on ventilators for 8, 10, 12 days, and some do very, very well, and we get them through that, give their lungs a rest. You know, I've always used ventilators in my career. It's when people are really going bad. This is more, they're going bad, but you just got to buy time. So you need those tools. You need the ventilators. That's why there's the fear. People don't know how many they need or what they need. And, you know, and the only criticism I can say, and it's all hindsight, over the last couple decades, we've kind of dismantled the healthcare system. It's been kind of run as a business, and hopefully people will learn now that let's not look at it as much as a business as, you know, something we need to help each other as a something that we have to have and support. It's not like selling cars or selling clothes. This is like, if we don't have the tools we need, people could be hurt. And I think that might is part of the problem. We've closed a lot of facilities and hospitals down over the past couple decades because they maybe weren't making as much money or whatever. And boy, we could have used those community hospitals and things they have now.
When you hear the CDC and the possibility they may urge Americans to cover their face in public, is that a good idea? Because I would imagine most of those face masks are going to be homemade and not the actual face masks that are being used in hospital because, you know, we need them to be in the hospital. So would you urge Americans when they leave their house to cover their face in public?
There's pros and cons to that. First of all, the face masks that you would use that aren't professionally done, they're better than nothing, but they're clearly not. There's a reason why the professional ones are better at preventing bacteria and viruses from coming in. That being said, the positive side of a face mask is that it actually can keep, you know, extra, well, the spittle or whatever you want to say from hitting you and possibly protecting you. The downside is people wear them for long periods of time, they touch them, and then whatever's on them, they then touch and inoculate themselves. There's this feeling of security, but then you've removed it. You know, if you watch the way a person will remove an N95 mask who's been trained, you know, we don't touch anything. We definitely don't touch the mask. You can't touch the mask because that actually has COVID on it. So that's my only worry. It's more than just wearing the mask. Like I see people, like, you know, we all go shopping and we try to get in and out fast. I see people with masks and with gloves, and I was talking to somebody. It was interesting. I talked to somebody who had gloves on, and I said, "Are you going to throw them away?" "Well, no, I said, "No, don't wear them all day. Those gloves might as well not be washing your hands." And then he said, "How do you know that?" I said, "I'm a doctor," and immediately I was at the deli. Immediately everybody backed off, and I said, "Wow, this is pretty impressive. I should have just said it first. I would have gotten the deli meats first." But it tells you that really, you know, people are really concerned, and I'm happy about that. But they have to know what they're doing.
Dr. Brian McDonough here with us on the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. If you do get it and then it's no longer in your system and you end up testing negative for it after you already had it and this has passed through you, what should you be doing? You know, how should you be living your life and should you be, you know, let's say if you were quarantined in a room and you live with multiple people, what should you do to make sure that that house is clean and the virus isn't living in your home still?
Yeah, well, what you would do, I mean, we don't have 100% guarantee that if you have it, you're protected for life. We don't know that. Coronavirus is a little weird that way, but let's just assume you're better off because you've been exposed and now you've gotten through it. You should be. You want to make sure that everything is clean, surfaces are clean, you wash your clothes, make sure that you really respect it and still do the same things you were doing social distancing before. Because what we do know, I mean, they've been following people. There's some people 36, 38 days out who still don't test negative. Some of those people in those initial cruise ships, they're finally done. But there were some 36, 38 days where they still were kind of shedding the virus. So it's persistent and it stays. But most people, you get through that 14 days and you retest it and you're okay. You should at least feel like you're kind of through that phase of it. And you got through it without the very serious respiratory effects. And just count yourself lucky.
How about the state of testing, Doc?
I wish we had more tests. What's the problem I have is it's still we're gearing and changing, and I think the president said or Dr. Birx said they're shifting systems, but there's still too many people. I'm waiting 4 to 6 days for results. So I have people who, you know, are quarantined and they're waiting, and we're waiting, and we've tested them, and I'd like to know quicker. There is that Abbott test, which is supposed to be 45 minutes or so, but the problem with that is there's a special piece of equipment you need to run it. They're trying to get that out. So people are doing things as fast as they can. So, you know, I want to get people their results as soon as I can, because obviously in the hospital setting, we treat everybody who's at risk until we know as if they have it. So that's a lot of extra PPE equipment. I will tell you something that's happening that's really good. We're doing a lot more telehealth. A lot more, you know, using computers. The doctors I work with, I'm teaching them how to do that stuff for some nerdy reason. I'm good at that. But I tell them, you know, how they can use computers to reach out to their patients. So we're actually seeing patients we never saw before or haven't seen in a long time and helping them out. So that's a nice positive. They released a lot of they relaxed a lot of the rules against that and are letting us do more. So we're taking advantage of that to try to help as many people as we can. Keep them out of the office too.
Only got about a minute or two left with Dr. Brian McDonough. Last one for you, Doc. A friend of mine has the coronavirus, and his wife is currently pregnant, and she has the coronavirus as well. What should they be concerned about? Because they asked me to ask you this question when it comes to their baby, because they haven't got any answers. Because you know she's obviously pregnant right now, but could there be any effect there?
I only can go on the initial studies that were from China, and there's about, I think it's like 27 case reports, and all the babies did well, born well. There weren't problems. It doesn't appear to be one of these viruses that affects the baby in utero or causes problems, which is really good. The bigger risk is, you know, mom getting through it, and if there's any issues with breathing or whatever, that she gets the support she needs, you know, the treatment she needs, because you want to make sure that the baby gets enough oxygen. That would be the biggest issue. But as far as something like toxoplasmosis or these weird things people can get that can harm the baby, there's no study to suggest that it would affect the unborn baby in that way. You just want to get, you know, mom through it as healthy as she can. But the good thing about nature, the good thing about life is, which I think this your friend will be happy about, is without a doubt, baby gets protected before mom. So if anything's going to happen, mom's not going to feel well, but the body will do everything it can to protect the baby, which is important.
Dr. Brian McD on Twitter. Make sure you check out his Coronavirus Today podcast. Doctor, always appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon, I'm sure.
Appreciate it. Good luck with everything, Zach, and thanks for doing it.
Bye. No problem. There's Brian McDonough. We'll take a timeout. We'll come on back on the Zach Gelb Show.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show. The Zach Gelb Show is on the air across the nation on CBS Sports Radio. Here's Zach Gelb.
It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. I saw a tweet earlier. It said, breaking, City of Toronto bans all public events until June 30th. There was a clarification that was issued about that, and it comes from at the fourth period on Twitter, which is a hockey account. Important, Toronto's ban is exclusively city-led events. This does not affect NHL, NBA from returning. City execs of the mayor's office told the producer of the fourth period podcast via email when asked if this affects pro sports. No, the mayor was speaking city-permitted events like parades and festivals. And I understand sports takes the back seat here, but we're a sports talk radio show, so we're going to try to figure out when this is going to come back, and nobody knows. But if you heard from Dr. Brian McDonough, let's say he was ballparking it, that we're going to be able to return to some sort of normalcy in June, you know, I understand people want to be optimistic, and I like the doc a lot, but I'll be very surprised. I just will, just off gut feeling. You know, I'm not a doctor. You know, I don't understand medicine. I don't understand science and all that. Just the way that this is going. Now, I hope he's right that we're back in June. But I got a feeling this is going to go into June. And I'm hopeful that in sometime in July that we could get back to some normalcy. Now, that would be very nice. It'd be long. Don't get me wrong, as the calendar's about to flip tonight to April. Yeah, it's going to stink April, May, and June being cooped up in the house. But even if it's late June, if we go back to normalcy, at this point, when you watch the news and hear nothing positive, and how could there be anything really positive other than this person donated that or this person donated this, which is nice and great, and you should be doing that if you can, I don't feel very encouraged about this right now. And I've said this before, and I hate to be doom and gloom here, and I know the NBA and the NHL, they want to finish their seasons. I'll be surprised if we have an NBA or an NHL champion. I was on one of our affiliates, 105.7 The Fan out in Milwaukee. I was on with their morning show, and they said that to me. They go, what do you think is the first major sport to return? And I said, baseball. I go, I don't think the NBA is going to continue this year, and I don't think the NHL will either. And they were crushed, obviously, because they're all Bucks fans. And if I was a Bucks fan, I'd be crushed too. And is there a way, whenever we get the okay, and it depends when it is, because you don't want to go into too much of next season. I guess if you're the NBA, you could maybe for the next year do a little bit of a condensed schedule or keep it as is and start up at Christmas. Let's say you get back in July. Sure, you could do a condensed schedule. Maybe do a best of three in the first two rounds at one site, where you play all the games at one site, and then you have the Eastern Conference and Western Conference finals and the NBA finals of a best of seven series. And I was reading today, this was in the New York Post by Mark Berman. And he says they're very determined, this was source told him, to have a champion in regards to the NBA. And it goes on to say the playoffs could be reduced to a slew of best of three series across the board. A single elimination format has been all but ruled out, only under one consideration, and that's as a last resort. Nothing is off the table, another league official told Mark Berman. And when you get about destinations where this could happen, if it's a one-site event, UNLV in Las Vegas, which has hosted recent summer leagues with all 30 clubs, and they have a ton of hotels there. One destination reportedly discussed was the Bahamas, and according to an NBA source, there's also been internal talks about Orlando, Atlantic City, Hawaii, and Louisville hosting the playoffs. Now, there's been some talk that they want to get it to 70 regular season games. That's not a necessity. Let's be real. When these sports come back, you're not finishing up these regular seasons. Now, you're going to have to give the athletes some time to get back into shape. I don't think it's as easy. Okay, you get the clearance, let's say, on July 15th. Okay, we're back on July 20th. You're going to have to give them a week or two to get back into shape and get back in and have a few practices. Probably less time with the NBA and the NHL compared to the MLB. But I really don't think that we're going to be able. I don't even stink because I love NHL playoff hockey and I love NBA postseason basketball. I just don't think it's going to be able to happen because when we return, yeah, sure, a lot of us may be all in. Yeah, let's go out. I'm going to say for some other people, without knowing what's going to happen next, yes, you may say right now when you're cooped up in your house, oh, yeah, I'm going to be running out, I'm going to be going out, I'm going to be doing this. There's probably going to be some gradual return to normalcy for some and some skepticism, too. And let's remember, players have emotions as well. And, yes, they make a lot of money, and they got to show up and they got to play, but you got to think about the players, too. And we know this commissioner. This commissioner will do what the players want. So if I have to sit here right now, and I saw at the end of this article, the NBA is still not ruled out, cancel the season altogether, and Jeff Van Gundy told the Post last week his gut tells him the season ultimately will be scrapped. Without knowing what's next, unfortunately, NBA fans and NHL fans, I have a feeling, like Jeff, that this season's going to be scrapped as well. I really do. It stink. So the next sporting event that you may see out of the four major sports could be baseball, but we'll hold that hope for an NBA postseason, NHL postseason too. We'll take a timeout. We come on back. Austin Hooper is going to join us. He's going to tell us why he signed with the Cleveland Browns. Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.